Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Theatrical Mustang Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Woodzik. This is episode 30 with Michael Morgan, my very good friend, and we talk about the upcoming production of Peter Pan and Wendy that he's directing at Whidbey Children's Theater, which just sounds fantastic. It has a steampunk aspect to it, and that opens July 9th. And runs through the 19th. You can get more information at wctmagic.org. And you can also check out the other summer offerings they have. Because, folks, children's theater is important. I was a weird and awkward and lonely kid who was kind of loud. And theater was the place that made me feel safe and making me feel like I had a community. And that community persists until today. And so it's important to support young actors in their work. So, you know, go do that. Go see Peter Pan and Wendy. All right. I hope you enjoy episode 30 with Michael Morgan. I'm pleased to welcome my good friend Michael Morgan to the podcast. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Katie. I'm excited to be on your podcast.
So you are directing a fantastical fairy tale of a show right now called, Peter Pan? I know this show. What made you choose this show?
Well, it was part of the Whidbey Children's Theater season, and I've always enjoyed the story, and we got to look at a lot of different scripts, and it was just seemed like a really fun adventure. And the full title of the script we're doing is actually Peter Pan and Wendy, which is cool. People don't know, I think, that there's actually a few different versions of J.M. Barrie's works of Peter Pan. Like, there's the original play, and then there's the book, and then there's extra side stuff. So there's a lot of things to kind of pull from, while still being faithful to J.M. Barrie.
And he wrote all of the side stuff as well, or?
Yeah. Like, he has different iterations of his of his stuff that just were in different versions. And we're not doing the Disney one.
No.
So everyone should know that. It's not the Disney one. It's cooler. we're actually doing a steampunk-themed Peter Pan and Wendy, which is very fun. And
what made you decide to do it through that artistic lens?
I wanted to find something that would be exciting and fresh for the cast and the audience, but also stay true to why Peter Pan was created. Because Neverland is that place that we all have a version of, which is the imagination. And we made some changes to it. Part of it was based on the original feeling a little outdated in some ways, including some of its social ethic content.
Yes.
You know, because when J.M. Barrie was writing this in the very early 1900s in England, Indians in America were just a fun thing that people thought about and, you know, seemed exciting and far away, and they had no real reason not to stereotype them awfully. So all the versions of Peter Pan that I've ever seen have pretty overdone and off-putting stereotypes of Native Americans.
Indeed.
And I really wanted to avoid that. And here on lovely South Whidbey, we have a not terribly diverse population, ethnically, but I also wanted to still capture the imagination of all of that. So what I've created is actually a group of mechanical beings called Coglings, and they created Neverland, and so they're still the natives of Neverland. And they still serve the same function in the story, and we still have Princess Tiger Lily, and it's still really fun, but without the cultural appropriation bit. And so that feels exciting and fun.
It feels a lot better that way, I would imagine.
It does, because it's 2015, and if you're just getting a bunch of kids and painting their faces and putting feathers in their headbands, then it's not really honoring anybody.
And it sort of empowers them, or not empowers, but challenges the youth actors to think more critically about the stories that they take a part in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was reading about another version of Peter Pan that recently did their own version, which was instead of having them be Indians or Native Americans, they created an all-female group called the Pounce.
The Pounce?
The Pounce, which was basically the inverse of the Lost Boys. And so I was happy to hear that there are other people out there also creating new versions that honor the story while still making it fresh.
Well, I mean, it's exciting. I don't know if you remember, there was sort of backlash. There was a production of The Mikado in Seattle that happened maybe 2 years ago where they did a lot of yellow face. And I mean, we're kind of evolved past. There's a way to still honor Gilbert and Sullivan and their entire canon without, misappropriating someone else's culture in a way that kind of feels icky and takes people out of the story.
Yeah, and I love Gilbert and Sullivan. I grew up on Mikado and Pirates of Penzance and all of that, and it is a tricky balance because you don't want to throw everything out.
Right.
Just because it came out of a social system that wasn't enlightened toward everyone being equal. Because that's really what the bottom line is that if you take an ethnic group and make them, well, they're like this, then you're doing something wrong at this point in society. And so it's an interesting and exciting challenge to keep things fresh and alive while not being dismissive or taking away from someone's cultural heritage.
So instead of swords, we walk back through the backstage. It looks like you have different kinds of weapons back there.
We do. There are still a few swords. There are swords, so come see the show. There's still sword fighting. but we also have some really cool futuristic guns and a sort of shoulder-mounted cannon. And
awesome.
And when I say futuristic, for any of our listeners that might not know steampunk as a term, my favorite definition for it is Victorian retrofuturism. And what that means is, if you were living in Victorian times, it's what you would imagine the future to be like. So in Victorian times, like steam engines were cool, and brass, and gauges, and all of those, at that point, modern technology. And so you mix that with Victorian fashion and some fantastical imagination of what the future might be like. And you have people flying in top hats with goggles and brass jetpacks.
That's amazing.
Like, that's one version. And so it's really a fertile ground for imagination, and because it's a time period and thing that never actually existed, so you can do whatever you want with it. And so that's a lot of fun.
So is there flying in this version of Peter Pan?
Well,
no spoilers.
There's a lot of imagination. And if you let yourself be immersed in that imagination, then there's flying. Being that we are in Whidbey Children's Theater, which we've actually done a lot of work to restore and update from the 50-year-old middle school auditorium that it is.
Right.
Legally, there is absolutely zero way to hoist children into rigging in a building like this. so we rely more on imagination and acting than we do on ropes in this production. And part of that is technical limitations, and part of that is just that we're focusing more on the fun and the imagination of the cast and less on, you know, let's spend a week on this one technical aspect.
Sure.
And because that's really our mission, is the experience of the cast growing and bonding and learning about theater And then at the end, there's a show, which ends up being awesome, but we're not doing it for the show. We're doing it for the children that are in the theater.
It's more about the process than
it
the
is,
product.
It is more about the process than the product. That's well said. And then, of course, you have children and adults coming to see the show, and it's inspiring to them to see what their peers can be doing. And it really is a magical thing.
So tell me about your casts. And I say plural because you've done the awesome children's theater kind of duality or triple threat of sort of sharing the wealth of some of the larger roles.
Yes. We, it's not something we do often just because it does require another level of logistics, but
more rehearsal, so everyone
a bit, yeah. But yes, we've double cast most of the lead roles, so we have two Wendys and two Peters and two Michaels and Johns and two Smees, and so it's really exciting for them because when they're not playing their role as a lead, they're actually narrating the play.
Oh, awesome.
So they're still in everyone's in every show, but they get to share the wealth, so to speak, on having that spotlight and, you know, taking on the hard work and acclaim that goes with getting a big role, you know, which a lot of people want. And we just had a really great group of young actors that we felt there was a lot of them that could handle that. And so we wanted to give everyone that chance. So if you buy tickets, I mean
when you buy tickets
for multiple nights, on the ticketing website, it actually says who's playing who each night. So if you're looking for someone you know, then you can check it out.
And then that's a really cool thing for audience members to come back and see the show maybe two or three different times so they can see the different pairings, which
Absolutely.
Is always fun.
Yeah.
And you want to go support young theater artists so they keep doing it and they feel like it's worthwhile and they have big full audiences.
Yeah.
So when people go to get their tickets, how will they do so and what are the dates of the show?
Okay. Official plug moment. So if you go to wctmagic.org, then that's our website and it tells you all about the show and you can click from there to get tickets. You can also just go straight on Brown Paper Tickets and search for Peter Pan and Wendy. The show opens Thursday. July 9th through 19th. So it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights at 7, and then Sundays at 2 for two weekends. And this upcoming weekend is Chichokum also.
It is, indeed.
So it's a big weekend for everyone.
We're going to have shows right next door to each other that we're directing. How
I
awesome
know.
Is that, Michael
It's
Morgan?
So exciting, and I'm glad that yours runs long enough that I can come see it after mine is done, because I'm not going to get out of the house, so to speak, until after my show is done. So that'll be a nice treat waiting for me at the other side.
Ah, shucks.
And yeah, and the other thing Whidbey Children's Theater is doing this weekend is we always run the fun, what is it called? It's called the Kids Zone down at Chichokum.
Can I get my face painted?
You absolutely can get your face painted. So we have face painting.
Will you be painting faces?
You know,
what if I want you to paint my face?
You'd probably have to do that like right after this interview.
Okay.
But if you're at Chichokum in downtown Langley this weekend, then you can stop by and they have like bubbles and face painting and fun activities. And
not just for kids either, because that sounds fun. Where in, is it going to be by Moe's kind of? Or
you know, they've switched around the orientation of Chichokum this year. So what used to be where the main stage is now where we will be with the Kids Zone.
So by the doghouse.
By the doghouse.
Okay.
And by, like, the Brackenwood Gallery and that sort of stuff.
Excellent.
And then the music main stage has moved elsewhere, the other direction. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but I'm sure everyone will find it.
Everyone will find it. And
yeah.
Chichokum's hard to spell, so I'll put the Chichokum website in the episode description, too, because there's so much awesome stuff to do in Langley this weekend. You can go see Peter Pan and Wendy and the Pillow Man and... If you were here next weekend, which would be the weekend of the 17th, you could see The Tempest with Island Shakespeare Festival and Peter Pan and Wendy and The Pillow Man all in the same weekend.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's like the only Christopher Walken kind of thing I can say.
Wow.
Wow. But the rest of the interview shouldn't just be us saying wow like Christopher Walken.
You should come see Peter Pan and Wendy, because if you don't, I don't know what I'll do.
Can you give us a little bit of Captain Hook, Christopher Walken as Captain Hook? Because that would just really entertain me, and I think it would entertain our listeners, too. I think, nay, our listeners are dying for that.
Well, I have to say first, I did not watch the TV Captain Hook, the TV Peter Pan with Christopher Walken.
Peter Pan Live.
I never watch any version of something I'm working on while I'm working on it.
Good call.
For that, but I will indulge you. Peter, why? Why are you here on my ship? You're acting very aggressively toward me, Peter. Is that a knife? Oh, God. Not the crocodile.
This podcast got dark real quick.
Peter Pan and Wendy, it's not just for the kids.
It's not just for the kids. All right, let's take it back, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years when you and I first met, which would be at the Rocky Horror Callbacks.
Yes, 2009.
That's 6 years ago. We've been friends for 6 years.
Yeah, we have.
So we're both in a callback for Rocky Horror. And then we just became friends because we're both kind of awesome.
Exactly.
But you started out as an actor in terms of your theatrical arc, yes?
Yes.
Can you remember the first show you did?
I don't remember what the show was when I was in, like, second grade, and I knew I was the king, though. It was some sort of...
So you started out...
On top.
As the king. Okay.
Yeah.
No pressure.
I went to the Waldorf School here on South Whidbey, and I just remember being in a fairy tale-esque... Mm-hmm. play and having a crown and a cape and that being pretty cool.
But you didn't know right then, like, this is gonna be my life.
No, I've never been really one of those people who made those sort of decisions. Like, oh, this is what I'm gonna do. Like, it's turned out that way. Like, I'm a theater person and that will never change. And I've found myself in the lovely, lucky place where I am able to work in a theater for my job, which is pretty amazing, really, because there's not a lot of that around.
No.
And so, yeah, I have a desk job here at Whidbey Children's Theater, which is that I also do marketing and admin assistant and all those sorts of exciting bits. And, it's pretty amazing. But I started off acting and just doing school plays, and then I was at South Whidbey High School during the glory days of Michael McInerney being the drama department teacher. And I got to do like 6 full-scale musicals in 4 years.
Holy crap.
When I was there. And it was amazing. And then plus like little, you know, drama class productions and learning Shakespeare stuff and doing things like that.
Which is your favorite musical that you did in high school? Can only choose one.
I can only choose one. I'm gonna choose two.
Okay.
Conceptually, I really enjoyed. We did Much Ado About Nothing with Beatles music.
Oh right.
As a musical.
You were the Duke in that.
I was
right?
the Duke. No, that was.
Oh no.
I was the Duke in Midsummer Night's Dream, which we did as 50s music.
Sorry.
It's okay. We did a 50s version of Midsummer Night's Dream. So I was the Duke, and I got to sing Duke of Earl.
Nice.
We did Beatles' version of Much Ado About Nothing. I was Leonardo, Hero's father. And
nice.
And then my other favorite was doing Hello, Dolly, where I got to be Horace Vander Gelder my sophomore year. And be a curmudgeonly
it's a good role for
old
you.
Man at age 15.
Nice. I played Mrs. Peru, and I was... 15. So.
Nice.
No, I was 14. When I was 15, I played Ruth in Pirates of Penzance. So I just kept playing, you know, like middle-aged character women in my teenage years, as you do.
Hey, you know, a role is a role.
A role is a role. And a toll is a toll. Yeah. And if we don't get our tolls, we don't get our roll. That's Robin Hood Men in Tights, right? I switched it, but yeah. Those are the rhymes I'll take your in word that. For it. Yes, sir. What else? So after graduating high school, what productions have you been involved with since then?
Well, I did the Nutcracker for a few years.
Did you?
I did. The local Whidbey Island Dance Theater production of Nutcracker, which is very good, if you haven't seen it.
So awesome. It's different each year. Yeah,
it's different each year.
And they did some aerial stuff this year.
It really holds its own. It's not like, like a small dance theater's version of Nutcracker. It's like legitimate. And so I did that. And I had sort of a break from acting for a while I had family and kids.
Oh, those kids, you know, they just eat up your time.
They
want
to be
taken
care of even at night.
What?
You know, it's against the law to leave them home alone. And so, my re-entry into theater was actually that year in 2009 when I met you. And I auditioned for Wicca in the general auditions, and I didn't end up being in any shows that year because I just had too much going on, but I met a lot of cool people. And then the next year, I was in The Understudy.
Get in the truck!
Get in the truck! And Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
I was going to say a line, but I'm not going to say the line because I'm keeping this PG for the children's theater listeners. But that was a memorable role.
Yes.
That was the same season.
Those two were the same season. Yeah. I think it was the next one.
Yeah.
But I'm fairly terrible at linear time. I remember all the things that happened, but not the order.
Right.
So, since then I've just been doing local plays, and I've worked with Wicca. I was in Taming of the Shrew last year with Island Shakespeare Fest. I got to be Petruchio.
With 2 weeks' notice, right?
That's true. It was almost 3 weeks where I was asked if I could
step in
for a lead Shakespeare role with, 500 lines. And it was a great adventure. And I got to be Cowboy Petruchio and work with some friends that I already knew, so that was great. And then just recently, I had my first show at Outcast Productions.
Hey, I was in that show.
Hey, you were in that show. I remember you. And that was.
We should probably just say the first part of that play.
It was In the Next Room.
By Sarah Rule.
And, yeah.
My favorite line of yours in that was, "Who strokes the cat's back? God?"
Yes. A lot of deep philosophy in that show. A lot of deep philosophy with double entendre and, that was a lot of fun, and I'm not doing Shakespeare this summer. I was originally going to be in The Three Musketeers, and I miss doing it, and I'm so glad that I'm not, because right now I would be trying to put up Peter Pan while rehearsing
for that,
and
yeah.
I think I would maybe die. So,
well, I'm glad you're not dying.
Me too.
So what was the first show that you directed? The directing has come to you recently in your artistic life.
Yeah, so I started directing. The first thing I directed was here at Whidbey Children's Theater, and it was The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And it was the same time that I started working here as a desk job also, because the two are separate. I hadn't done it before, but it was sort of in the back of my mind as a thing to explore. And for any aspiring directors out there, children's theater is both the best and worst place to learn to direct. Because
Indeed.
On one hand, it's very forgiving because it's children's theater and people are much more gracious and allowing of the process. And on the other hand, you are working with a lot of very young people, and that makes it difficult in a different way. So it's definitely a learning experience. So
I think what's so great, because the first play I directed was in college, and it was like a one act. So I directed a couple plays in college, and then I did Prairie Fire Children's Theater, which is similar to Missoula in that you sort of have a show in the back of your truck and you go to a different city each week and have up to 100 kids we were doing Jack and the Beanstalk. But what I think is so great about directing children's theater as a director is it really helps you figure out how you say what you want to say as a director, how to make a small person do something without... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying this very well at all, which is funny because I'm talking about being articulate. But but when you have to talk, you know, if you have a cast that's aged, you know, 5 to 18, because the cutoff for our program was supposed to be 7, but in some towns this was the only theater they had all year. And so right. They would be like, yeah, my kid's 7, even though they were not. They were 5 or 6.
He doesn't walk yet, but he's 7.
Right. He's 7. He's just, it's fine. Don't worry about it. But having to just direct the whole group, all ages at one time, but then tailor the specific directing styles for different ages.
Right.
And to be honest, directing children is not that different from directing adults, because yes, adults have more more of a vocabulary and they have more experience and all of that, but they still need to be directed differently. They still have their, you know,
their needs,
peculiarities and whatnot. And so I think anyone who directs should definitely at least try their hand at children's theater, because it sort of expands the toolbox, as it were.
It does. And that's the case with this show, too, is we have third graders up through 18 years old in our cast. And, yeah, I mean, not everyone speaks the same language. So you do have to find that middle ground of, you know, helping the younger ones just work on how to be on stage and how to be heard and how to be physical. And not that you're not still working with the older people on that thing too, but and then finding some time for your older actors to give them what they want, which is a little bit more of the motivation and the character and,
right.
and those things. But it's not all by age either. We have, you know, I have one young actress who insists on being addressed by her character name at all times.
Is this Riley?
It is Riley.
I love Riley
so much. This is Riley. And,
I'm a fan of Riley.
And she's in this, and she was Jemima in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And
what role is she playing in this?
She is Noodler the pirate. And
she's like, Riley isn't here right now.
Yeah, basically. And
address me as Noodler.
Yeah, and it's very cool because she is intensely involved in every role that she takes, and she takes it very seriously. And that's just some, you know, people come into this world with things, and that's one of hers. And so, and she's only like 9, I think. So it's, you can't judge a child on their age.
Absolutely.
In either direction. You know, the high schoolers are sometimes terribly immature. And so it goes both ways, but it's an adventure, and at the end of it you really feel like you're all supporting each other and you're creating something that's special and that you're going to remember. And I know from my personal experience and from just the things that I've heard from the actors here is that these are really important memories to them, really formative experiences. And we have alumni who have been part of Whidbey Children's Theater come back and direct and teach classes. Another plug, we have summer camps.
please.
We have Summer Harris and I think Dinah Hasrick, and we have Anna Dunwilder, and they're all alumni and teaching camps this summer. I think I have those names right. Check the website, wctmagic.org. Go to classes. And there's some starting in late July. There's some starting in August. And they're really special and fun experiences. But it, to me, it's a big testament to the program that we have people who are now adults and they're still coming back and they still have great memories here of what they've been through and what they've emerged as from it.
Well, I know. I mean, for me personally, growing up as a little kid, like, I was awkward, and I was lonely, and I had a really big vocabulary and I wasn't cool, but I really wanted to be cool. And theater was the place where it was okay to be all of that.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I would have survived through middle school and high school if I didn't have that creative outlet.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so important.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that our executive director, Kate Casey, has said on multiple occasions, is like, the program has saved lives. There are people...
Without a doubt.
There are people who have felt lost and that there wasn't anyone they could turn to and really been in a dark place. And theater is a place where you can not only find people who are willing to just be with you, even if you're in that space, but it's also an activity and a pursuit and a craft that you can process that through.
Right.
And, you know, that's true of some other things, but not a lot of them really get to the heart of those things as well as theater does. And it's such an interesting paradox. I know I've talked to some people who aren't actors, and so that it's a little bit hard to understand how somehow by being someone other than yourself, you're able to process who you are.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't sound like it makes sense, but if that sounds like it makes total sense to you and you're listening to this and you've never tried acting before, then that means you should try it.
Good plug for theater geekery in general.
Yeah, because it's pretty amazing. And I could just talk for hours and hours about how wonderful theater and acting is, just for myself. But it's pretty magical seeing happen with people who are young and forming into who they'll always be.
Yeah. Well, good on you for taking this on as your vocation. That's pretty excellent.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was one of those things that just presented itself and was clearly the way. You know, isn't it nice when life does that? Like, no, here you go.
This way. Come on.
So, yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how you've built your... I mean, what would you say your way of building a character as an actor is and how that sort of fed into and informed how you approach directing now that you do both?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I mostly just rely on pure unadulterated talent. And so that can be hard to teach.
I see. Wow.
And it can be hard for directors to understand that about me.
Go on.
Yeah. No. So it's the opposite of that. But I've learned so much from the directors that I've had, and I'm not going to start naming any of them because then I'll have to like keep going on for a long time. But just having those experiences of being directed in different ways and that helping me grow as an actor, and when I'm developing a character, it can be a painful process in a lot of ways, because you really have to explore what the overlap is between you and that character. You have to find that place, because you pick any two people and there's something that they have in common and a place where they connect, and that's just true of any two humans.
Right.
And even if you're playing a character that on the surface you really don't like, for example, you have to find who they are and get to the point where you can be in a mindset where, as that character, you wouldn't do anything differently than what they do in the play. Because if you don't understand why they're doing something, then you can't portray them well. And so you have to be able to see through their lens. And so I have had the opportunity to try and impart some of that to actors here and in differing levels, because when we're doing a huge multi-age show, there's a little less time for delving into the psyche of each character.
Indeed.
You know, but we've done also some high school shows. I directed Diary of Anne Frank in December, and that's really one of the things I'm most proud of so far, directing-wise, is and of that cast, they really got into the space of being in that time and place. And we used our little black box theater and made it feel very closed. And they really did a wonderful job of finding that space of being in 1940s Europe, but also in maintaining a safe distance, because that's always what you want to do too, is not, you don't want to have a teenage cast and be like, okay, pretend you're in the Holocaust, and then have them get depressed feel unsafe. And that can be a fine line. But yeah, I've had some very rewarding interactions with actors just exploring those processes. And it's amazing how you can see it change their outlook on things just to have gone through that process within themselves, and they know themselves better at the other end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then sometimes it's just, no, pirates, be louder. You know?
from Holocaust to pirates and everything in between.
Exactly.
What's on your bucket list as an actor?
Oh, gosh. Juliet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I'm too old?
No.
Okay. Am I still an ingenue? You know, it's interesting. I don't have one.
Seriously?
Really.
Okay.
That's
very zen of you.
It's a mix of zen and underprepared. I find the two often go...
I'm stealing that.
Hand
That's a
in
great
hand
quote.
Really well. Yeah, I mean, I'm a lover of theater, and I've gone to a lot of theater and been in a lot of theater. And one of the things that I would love to change about my own theater habits is that I haven't read a lot of plays on my own. And that's on my list, is reading more plays, just in my own time and space.
And then maybe you'll develop a bucket list.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I've seen shows and wanted to explore characters that I've seen. In high school, I wanted to be Judd from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to be him.
Because you're a good you're a really good dancer.
Well, thanks.
Some people might not know that about you, but you've taught dancing before.
I taught swing dancing, and so I'll give the caveat that, I'm a good/fun dancer. Not a good, like, we should hire him to perform in a dance thing.
He should be on Dancing with the Stars. You'd actually kill on Dancing with the Stars, I think.
I would, maybe in the humor portion. But no, I love dancing. I took a lot of tap dancing in high school. And I was in high school during the late 90s when swing was back. And the next hot thing. And I was one of, like, three guys at my high school that could do it decently. So I got tons of practice.
Awesome.
It was before I developed any real social skills, so I didn't, like, transform that into, like, you know, dates or anything. But I got a lot of dancing in, and then a few years later, I taught classes at Island Athletic Club, and it was a really fun mix between people who were in their 60s and, like, had learned that kind of dancing as part of what you're taught to become an adult.
Right.
And then people who were in their 20s and discovering a new thing. And it was fun having that mix of people in one room doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michael Morgan.
Yeah.
Swing dancing. I would like to see you do Ibsen. And that's what I'll say about plays that you should read and plays you should be in. I think you'd be really good. Hi, Taylor. Tyler Raymond, hi.
Is Rod in here, you know?
I don't think he is.
I keep getting emails from him, so I keep thinking he's here.
Let's
do a quick check. Would he be up in the booth if he's in here?
Yeah. Yeah, give a look.
There's a little cameo. I'm not going to edit that out, because that
you're
was
gonna,
awesome.
You're not going to edit that out?
No.
Yeah, that was
Tyler Raymond.
That was a nice insight into the... Nice.
How Wicca's in your backyard?
Yeah, Wicca. We're sitting.
Whidbey Island Center for the Arts. For those of you who doesn't know,
we're sitting,
what Wicca stands for.
We're sitting outside 2 feet from the Children's Theater and about 20 feet from Wicca, and it's nice that our technical directors have a lovely relationship.
Aw, they have a bromance, don't they?
They talk, and you know, share ladders and stuff. It's great.
But you heard what I said earlier about Ibsen?
I did, yes.
Okay, good.
I am...
The Wild Duck or yeah. Hedda Gabler.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I know just enough about Ibsen to recognize the names of his plays.
Doll's House.
Doll's House, that's one of the ones I know. And, but yeah, I own those plays.
You own some Ibsen? You kind of look like pictures of Ibsen that I've seen.
I could like, manicure my face
to look like Ibsen.
To get to an Ibsen place. Is there a play starring Ibsen? Is there, like, a...
I don't know.
You know how there's, like, the whole Mark Twain? Where it's just the character Mark Twain? We should make one that's just Ibsen.
So the first professional show I was ever in was called When We Dead Awaken, which is the last play that Ibsen ever wrote.
Okay.
And as one of the actors pointed out, one of the company members, I was just an intern at this the Commonwealth Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. And I played this part of this nun who has no lines the entire play. And so we just need to talk about this right now. So it was the last play that Ibsen ever wrote. And he was kind of suffering from dementia as he was writing it. And so not everything makes sense. Like, at the very end of the play, there's an avalanche on stage. He writes an avalanche to happen on stage. And so these two characters have helped each other climb all the way up to the mountaintop. And then the avalanche happens. And then the nun, who's apparently climbed up the mountain after them, completely alone, with no help, sort of shouts after the woman she's supposed to be taking care of. And she says, Irene, pox vobiscum. And so one of the company members is like, your first line as an actress is the last line that Ibsen ever wrote. But it's a messed up play.
Yeah, that sounds great and interesting.
But I think the character, and I can't remember what his name is, but he's reunited with his former muse as a sculptor at this spa. And I think you could sort of think that Ibsen was... That character is similar to Ibsen, but like I said, he was having dementia a little bit as he was writing it.
So maybe I shouldn't start with that one.
Maybe no.
Maybe
no.
Warm into his
Doll's
more
House.
Popular
I would start with Doll's House.
And then get into that one, which was, tell me again the name?
When We Dead Awaken.
When We Dead Awaken. Yeah, an avalanche on stage sounds challenging. Did you just do like lights and sound?
It was really cool, actually. We had the set designer that... And I'm going to try to explain it with my hands, but I know that doesn't translate to an audio medium, but it'll help me try to explain it visually. We had this, I think it was about six to 10 feet tall, this stick that had a lot of fabric attached to it.
Uh-huh.
And it was sort of like a mousetrap mechanism. So when the avalanche happened, it snapped forward and all this fabric came over with it.
Interesting.
And then that was how we did...
You got avalanche.
Well, it's interesting because their original theater is very similar to the Clyde, wherein it's this little town in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Lanesboro, Minnesota is a little town, Langley-esque, but, you know, in southeastern Minnesota. And they did theater out of this old movie theater before they built a new theater. It's not totally in the round. It's more of a thrust, but just next door. And... The Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis donated a lot of their old seats to that new theater. But they're fun people.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a... There's one scene in Peter Pan that, as I was reading it, and still as I'm producing it and directing it, I wonder how people have done it in the past. It's just this one scene, and it takes place in the lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
I won't give any big spoilers here. But
no spoilers.
It involves... A bunch of the staging in the script is there's all the Lost Boys and Wendy and Peter and John are on a big rock in a lagoon.
Yeah.
And there's water.
Uh-huh.
And then the pirates come and they all have to dive off the rock into the water. And then the pirates come in a boat on the water. And then there's also a Neverbird, which is a Peter Pan character some may not be familiar with, but... is part of J.M. Barrie's original thing. So the Neverbird is floating in her nest on the water. And then there is some battle. And there's also someone who needs to fly away on a kite.
That sounds like an unproducible scene.
I read it a few times before starting to come up with solutions. So come see Peter Pan and see how I figured it all out. but yeah, it's you know, sometimes you read a scene and you're like, who wrote this? Have they made plays before? You know, no, it's a great script and really finds that really great middle ground between like honoring all the characters and giving them substance while still just being really fun.
Yeah.
I read an earlier script that would be great for, I would say, like a high school cast only. And it delves a lot more into the characters and is a little bit meatier than the all-age group would succeed at. But it's been really exciting just reading all those versions of Peter Pan because it's actually quite dark in a lot of ways.
It is.
And you can explore that, and we don't do that too much in this version because of our demographic, but there's a lot there for the thinking audience member of any age.
So as we wind down this interview, what advice would you give to actors and or directors?
Oh, well, I think being humble, honestly, is one of the biggest ones. I literally remember the moment when it became like I'd known this already, but it became clear to me as an actor that when I'm an actor in a show, I'm a person and I have rights and I have opinions and all these things, but literally I am an artistic tool in someone else's process.
Yeah.
You know, and I have my own process within that one. And that's part of it, but I was in a show, and I won't say which one, but where it was about my third time making a suggestion to the director, and when I realized by the tone of his response, like, oh, you don't want to hear all of my ideas, and that might sound like he was being mean or something, but it wasn't. It was really just that. Whether you're, as an actor, you need to understand what your role is, both literally and figuratively, in the show, and that's to be an actor and to move the story forward and be part of that fabric that is being directed by a director. And then as a director, being humble and realizing that people are giving you their respect and their attention and listening to what you say because you're doing it in a way that's respectful and humble and for the art. And not because you're being an egomaniac. So I think rampant ego has ruined more shows than lack of talent or funding ever has, really.
Agreed.
and it's always interesting, and I'm, you know, I won't get into any details, but we live in a community that produces an amazing amount of art, and it's interesting seeing all of the range of that.
Yes.
From people who really obviously do approach it very humbly and to people who approach it very grandly and everything in between. And they can succeed at both ends of that scale. But I think just keeping that part of you very clear about what it is you're setting out to do and that being the ultimate goal is probably the advice I would give.
That's good advice. So, Michael Morgan, you also had a really good idea that a little birdie, a.k.a. your wife, Catherine Morgan, told me.
Yes.
Which was that someone should interview me for the podcast.
I did have that idea.
And so I wanted to go on the record asking you if you would interview me for my birthday for this podcast.
Absolutely.
That's going to be fun.
Yes, because your birthday's in September. Correct?
In August.
Is it August? Okay. Hey, I was close. I was only a month off. I have it written down somewhere. It's in my phone. Yes, I would love to. That would be fun, and I will be through my Peter Pan arc, so I'll have a brain again. And, yeah, that would be exciting. When's your birthday exactly?
August 17th.
August 17th.
I'll be turning 30 years old.
You'll be turning 30 years old?
I know.
My goodness.
You can't believe it, because I look so young.
I can't believe it. I assumed you were maybe 14.
God bless you, Michael Orion. All right, so Peter Pan, July 9th through the 19th. We're going to have the links and info in the episode description. Also, visit wctmagic.org to see classes that are happening this summer. And then I would imagine soon you'll be announcing the next season.
We actually have.
What?
We have.
Tell me everything.
Ooh, Beauty and the Beast is the first thing. It is. That one is the Disney one.
Can I be in it?
I wish you could, you know. We try to, you know, keep a healthy mix of, like, sometimes we'll do just the big, fun Disney version of a musical, and then we'll also put in just the small, complicated dramas. And, check out our season on our website. Beauty and the Beast is the first one. Sign-ups for that are July 15th. It's 3rd through 12th grades, so if anyone listening has a young actor interested, they can call or sign up on that day, starting at 10 a.m., and they fill up really fast now.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful blessing and curse for the theater. Check that out. We also have Seussical the Musical, which is our season ender next year. We have Proof, which is for our high schoolers, which is a very small cast and a very intense show. And we have Quilters, which Lonnie Brockman is returning to direct, which she directed
Fantastic.
Here. She directed it here years ago, and it's a really well-loved show. And others as well.
So others.
Go online and check it out, and we hope to see you at the theater.
Michael Morgan, thank you for being on the podcast. You were delightful.
Thank you, Katie. Love you.
Love you too. Bye.